I live in Israel. This season is dedicated to the memory of the 1,400 of my countrymen who were massacred on October 7th and the 240 people that were kidnapped and are being held hostage by the terrorist organization Hamas. Hopefully they will be returned to their families as soon as possible, and hopefully this terrible war will be able to come to a peaceful end very soon. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 81 of Season 6 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we take a Capra-esque journey through the 1946 classic It's a Wonderful Life, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is Leandra Lin of the Rocky Horror Minute. Welcome to the show, Leandra.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to jump on in.
Yeah, I mean, there's no time warp here, so I apologize for that, but, there's sort of a, not in these minutes, but later minutes, there will be something that happens in time, but maybe you want to call it a time warp. I don't know. Maybe it's a ripple in time, or, in Back to the Future, they would just say that it's a parallel 1985 that has skewed off the regular timeline or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah. A little less singing and a little less dancing, but it's essentially the same thing.
Yeah, that's true. And no Tim Curry, and no Susan Sarandon, and no Barry Bosslager, what can you do? You got instead, in their place, you got Jimmy Stewart and Donna Reed.
I think that's a good trade-off.
Yeah, and Henry Travers. Henry Travers must be the, in place of Tim Curry here. So
that makes sense. I think you're probably right. Yeah.
Well, who else could take that spot?
No, you're right. I just hadn't thought of it in terms of that, but that's spot on.
Yeah, it's, you got to have some sort of clearance, so there you go.
Okay. Well, now I know what I want to see.
you want to see a remake of this movie with characters from Rocky Horror, or vice versa?
Oh, maybe vice versa. I think but at the very least, what I definitely need to see is what Tim Curry would do with the Clarence role. Even if it wasn't a full swap, that's something that needs to happen.
Right. I'm actually curious to know if he would do it as he's had some great characters. So, he could do it as a Wadsworth. He could do it as a Pennywise. Or he can do it as
Dr. Frankenfurter.
I was going to say Frankenstein. I knew it wasn't Frankenstein. Frankenfurter. Right. There you go. I was close. Frankenfurter. Correct. So, if Tim Curry is interested, I will gladly have him on the show and we can discuss it. If you have connections to him, maybe we can talk to him.
Yeah, I'll see if I have connections and whether or not he listens to podcasts in general. I think he probably does.
Well, he must listen to the Rocky Horror Minute, doesn't he?
Oh, he must. He's an avid fan, I'm sure. He just hasn't called in, hasn't written yet, but it's coming, I'm sure.
Okay, keep your hopes up. It's possible. It's possible.
Yeah, we had Barry Boswick on we had a Christmas special and he played Santa Claus, and it was super fun.
What do you mean? Wait, he was willing to be on your, you got him on the show?
Oh yeah. We got him on the show we decided our first year that instead of doing something that was specifically a minute breakdown for Christmas, we wanted to just do a bunch of Rocky-related skits and songs, and we asked Barry Boswick if he'd be willing to do some line readings for Santa Claus, and he did. So I was just highly amused that...
How'd you get in touch with him?
I am friends with somebody who's close friends with him, so I was just like, Barry, Fairy Boswick would say no to this, right? And my friend was like, what? No, this sounds like the sort of thing that he would be very amused by. So sometime this year, we're hoping to get him on to ask him some actual questions. But even if not, he still was our Santa.
Oh wow, that's very cool. That's very cool. See,
Yeah.
in the six seasons that I've done this, I've only gotten one cast member on from it, and that was my first season with The Great Escape. I got David McCollum, who recently passed
Oh,
away.
wow.
So I did an interview with him about his experiences making the movie. I wanted him to do a minute with me, but he said he doesn't really use Skype and whatever. So I basically recorded our phone conversation where I had 15 minutes to think of questions to interview him on, and it was amazing. It was definitely a great interview to be able to do.
Well, that sounds wonderful.
Yeah. So anyone who's interested can go back and listen to that episode. It was towards the beginning of season one. I think it was like I think I released it between episodes 39 and 40 of season one, or maybe it was between 40 and 41. It was somewhere around that point. So if anyone can go there and take a look at it. The name of the episode is My Great Escape, which he mentioned when he was referring to his ex-wife. So yeah, it was a very interesting conversation. I'll leave it at that. So minute 81 begins with Billy giddily going to cash in his deposit and ends with Potter closing the door silently. So basically, we left things on Friday with Uncle Billy being very, very happy, walking through town. We're not sure exactly at the beginning where he's going, and then we find out that he's going to the bank itself. He enters the bank, and as he's about to fill out his deposit slip, Potter comes in. He goes over to chide Potter a little bit about those Bailey boys. And while he's doing that, he somehow misplaces the envelope that he's holding. And we will be discussing this mysterious envelope a lot over the course of this week. It is the main focus of this week, I guess you can say.
It's the star of this week, for
Yeah.
sure.
For sure. And what Uncle Billy then does is, as this minute begins, he is still chuckling at making fun of Mr. Potter, who has already discovered that he has something. He has this mysterious envelope by him, but Uncle Billy doesn't realize it. And Uncle Billy stands at the counter, getting ready to fill out his deposit slip, and then he just walks over to the teller or the cashier, and he says, "Good morning, Mr. Bailey. Good morning, Horace." And as he's doing it, I was thinking about who's this guy who's playing the character of Horace. Who is this little known actor that has a very important role in this movie by trying to point out to Uncle Billy certain things? And this actor's name is Eddie Featherton, who was born in 1896 and passed away in 1965 at the age of 68. He has 227 IMDb credits.
Oh, wow.
And his claim to fame is that more than 40 of these roles, he was either a reporter, newspaper man, photographer, or someone working in a bank. So I think he, got a little bit of a niche there. That was the type of work that he did. He had these small little things. Billy is standing at the in front of the cashier. On top, we see it says paying and receiving. And he passes over to Horace, his slip, and Horace turns to him and goes, I guess you forgot something." And he goes, "Huh? You forgot something? What? Well, aren't you going to make a deposit?" "Oh, sure, I am." "Well, then it's usually customary to bring the money with you." "Huh? Oh, shucks. I knew I had it." Now, I have a big problem with the fact that George knows that Uncle Billy is very absent-minded.
Yes.
Why the hell would he give him $8,000 to go deposit?
That is my note. How this person was ever put in charge of things is beyond me.
That's right.
I can only think and that I'm not a doctor, but I am somebody who has a working knowledge of mental health. It seems like George Bailey is what might be called an over-functional person, and what tends to happen with George is over-functional, and he is very much on top of things, but they tend to surround themselves with under-functional people like Billy. And Billy, of course, is going to mess this up because Billy is an under-functional, kind of flighty person. And it is something that it's kind of Billy was set up for failure with this, just based on their personalities.
Right, but this isn't the first time that he's getting, you know, it's not as if they make it seem here that this is the very first time that he's giving him this job. You know, this seems like this is Billy's job. So, you know, and George has been working, or he's been running the building and loan since 1928, and this is 1945. So we're talking 17 years. He's trusted Uncle Billy 17 years to do this job, and he hasn't messed up once, or not this big, if at all. I'm actually gonna go out on a ledge and say that he's never messed up before, because I think if he would have messed up, George would have changed the way they would have done things. Even if he Absolutely. Misplaced $100, doesn't matter. You know.
But this is one of those things where I think that if George had thought about it, he would have gone, now Billy's not somebody that can really focus. Maybe there should be something else that I put him in charge of, but it hasn't been a problem yet. So, okay, this should be fine. But I still think that Billy Bailey is set up for failure, because this is exactly the sort of thing that can happen when you're very flighty, heart of gold friend who isn't terribly organized is in charge of something this huge.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a problem. There's no question about it. I mean, this is there aren't that many flaws, I would say, in this movie, but this is needed for the plot, but it just doesn't make sense. It's not something that would have normally happened in he would have given it to either Eustace or Tilly to take care of it. I mean, they're cousins. It's not as if, you know, it's not as if the two of them are completely you know, not connected here. You know, it's not that they need to try to say, okay, should we trust these people that are working here for 20 years, you know, as opposed to someone who forgot to go to his nephew's wedding because he, you know, even though he had a string tied around his finger.
I really would like to think that it's one of those things where maybe George in the past has gone, maybe we have Tilly do this. And Billy goes, no, I can do this. You can count on me. This is different. I know how important this is. Like, I can absolutely see this being a family issue, because Billy, of course, is older, and there's a level of how can you tell this person who has been around longer than you and hypothetically knows more about what to do, that they can't do this specifically, like, basic but important thing. So I really wouldn't be surprised if, while there hasn't been an issue before, it's something that everybody's somewhat uneasy about.
Right. Okay. All right. That I can buy that. I definitely can buy that. I mean, come on. Everyone knows that he is absent-minded, even Horace, because Horace then says, yes. How about that finger there, pointing to, you know, the fact that Billy has a string around one of his fingers, saying maybe that string is what's going to tell you where you left the money. So maybe this has happened before, but Horace has saved the day.
Yeah.
You know, George doesn't know about it, but it could be that there have been some mishaps along the way.
The major factor in this is maybe in the past he hasn't bumped into Potter.
Well, maybe he did, but he just didn't give the Potter the money. That's the difference.
Exactly.
Yes. No, but I mean, what happened last week, if you're paying attention, is, you know, anyone who's paying attention will notice that what he did was very absent-minded here also, because he folded the envelope inside of the newspaper and happened to, you know, just pass the newspaper back. It wasn't something, you know, it was done in a very subtle way also.
It's the sort of thing that I could see myself doing. I lose my phone like 3 times a day. I lost my wallet for 3 weeks last year because I had moved and put it in a box and didn't know where it was. So I can't really give Billy too much trouble because Billy is me. I can't be trusted.
Okay, so it's a good thing that you're just the guest here and I'm not giving you $8,000.
Yeah, don't give me $8,000. I will put it down and go, it's disappeared.
Right, especially since that $8,000 in 1945 is worth a little bit more nowadays. We talked about that last week, where it's that's a lot of money. Yeah, it's not something that you really want to. I asked the question last week, and I don't have the answer to it as to how is it possible that they really have that much money in their in their kitty.
And that's a good question.
Because, you know, for their time, if you're talking about $8,000, right? So, okay, you know what? I'll ask you the first question. They have a vault. Why aren't they keeping that money in the vault? I mean, obviously, it's safer to keep it in the bank, except for during the Depression. But still, you know, you gotta get the money from point A to point B. And that seems to be the issue here.
Yeah, I had no idea. Why would you give Billy this responsibility?
That's right. It's a lot. It's definitely a lot. But as you said, you know, nepotism.
Yes.
They gotta give it to him because he's part of the family. And as this is happening, we get a shot from inside of Potter's office. And he opens up the newspaper and, is ecstatic that he's found the money. And they have like a few notes of ominous music that happens right there. The look of recognition on Potter's face. And he goes, Bailey. And then he turns to his helper behind him, his man. And he goes, take me back there. Hurry up. Come on. Look sharp. You know, he has him, wheel him over back to the door so that he can quickly look out. You know, and... You know, he slowly opens the door and you see him peeking out and he's looking at Billy and Billy is trying to search his pockets, trying to find out, trying to find the money somehow. And Potter keeps looking on. And then, you know, we see Billy go outside and he did you notice where he starts looking for things when he's outside?
Was it in the snow?
Well, he's looking. Beforehand, he's looking inside of the. Sorry, before he goes outside, he's looking near where he was filling the deposit slip. He's just looking in the garbage. You know, maybe he dropped it in the garbage pail.
Which probably is something that he's done in the past. And maybe. He's just so, oh.
Maybe. And, you know, Potter is enjoying watching all this, and he watches Billy hustle out outside, you know, slowly closes the door, nice and happy that this is what's going on. Finally, he's got those Baileys where he wants them.
I do like that in the universe of this minute, and only this minute, there is a possibility that Potter might do the right thing. Because you at least get the idea that that's his gut instinct. He first gets his goon to push him toward the door. And then we don't know for sure what he's going to do with this information now that he knows exactly what's happening. And maybe by next minute, he decides to do the right thing and the day is saved. And this is the end of the movie. Or maybe not.
I don't know. I think we've gotten to know Potter quite well throughout the course of this movie. And you know that, forgetting about the fact that there's sinister music, you know that he is definitely going to be doing, he's not going to be doing the right thing.
No, of course not.
You know, that's also one of the reasons why, and I've mentioned this before, that Potter seems to be one of the best villains in movies because they actually let him get away with this, even during the days of the code. You know, when people couldn't get away, you know, you had to show that everyone gets some sort of retribution for what they've done. But Potter is one of the few people that is able to get away with the fact that he basically keeps this money and doesn't give it back. Exactly. You know, think about it. If someone took $350,000 from you, you would do all you can to try and find that money.
But what's interesting is it seems like most people don't even realize that it was Potter who did it. By the end, it's they don't really ever reach back out. And
nobody cares.
Nobody cares because, I mean, it's a happy ending, but you don't think about what's happening in the periphery of that happy ending.
Correct. Because you don't need to. Because I think exactly. That's part of that's part of the theme of this movie is the fact that, you know, what's important is the people that are around you and the people that care about you. And if there are people that are going to be able to, that are willing and able to help you, so then, you know, you don't have any worries. So he no longer needs to worry about the fact that that money has disappeared. It doesn't matter. Absolutely. We'll figure it out.
Yeah. There's always another day.
That's right. You know, so I think that they do a nice job with that. You know, by showing that the way that plays out. Basically, we see Uncle Billy leave the area, and you know, we'll have to wait and find out tomorrow where he goes next to look for things.
It could be anywhere.
It could be. Could be. So did you have anything else you want to say about this unit?
Not particularly. You really jumped in and gave me a great opportunity to throw out the points that I had already prepared.
Okay, that's good. Isn't that the way these conversations are supposed to go?
One would hope.
Exactly. That is the goal. And I'm glad when we're able to reach that goal. So there's actually one thing that I did have to say about it. So the name Horus. Do you know what it means?
I don't.
Have you ever heard the name before?
I know that it's an Egyptian god.
That is one of them. There is an Egyptian god. There is a Roman leader who's known as Horatius Flaccus. I think that's how it was. But he was known as Horus. He was a senator.
Oh, okay.
In Rome, back in the day. there is an Egyptian god by the name of Horus, but it's actually spelled differently. I found a list of, must be like 10 pages of people named Horus. I've never heard people being called that name before. It was very weird to me to see so many that were listed here.
I'm wondering if it was just a much more common name back then, kind of like, I guess, Agatha now. You don't really, there were plenty of Agathas many, many years ago, but you don't really see that as a common name these days.
Right. I mean, most of the people that I see on this list that were named Horus were born in the 1800s or 1900s. But literally, there are a lot of people here on this list. There was a basketball player, an NBA player named Horus Walker, who passed away in 2001. He was born in 1937. You know, that was one of the most recent ones that I found. There are a few others here and there. But and then there are a bunch of fictional characters also named Horus. There's a character on the show Family Guy whose name is Horus. There is a novel written by George Sand in 1840 called Horus. There is a daily cartoon, you know, a comic strip named Horus. There is a video game series from the 1980s called Horus. Clifford the Big Red Dog, there one of the characters' name is Horace Bleakman. On Lost, the TV series Lost, there was a character named Horace Godspeed.
Oh, I remember that.
Horace was one of the henchmen in 101 Dalmatians. What else is there here? In Harry Potter, there is a character named Horace Slughorn.
Okay. I do remember that too, yeah.
Yes, that's the that's an important character in Harry Potter. So yeah, okay, that's all I have for this episode. Every Monday we have a segment called Capra Monday, where my guests will give their top five Frank Capra movies. So, Leandra, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
All right. I think that It Happened One Night is my number five. Number four is Mr. Deeds Goes to Town. Just amazing commentary on the role of media. Really like You Can't Take It With You, of course. Mr. Smith Goes to Washington is my number two. I think that that's Jimmy Stewart at his best. And then this is kind of a cheesy answer, maybe. I have to go with Arsenic and Old Lace as my favorite. It's just so charming, so
Wait, I
fun.
missed something there. You said it happened one night, Mr. Deeds. And then
You
I
can't take it
heard,
with you.
I missed, okay, I missed You Can't Take It With You.
Oh, I might have just glossed over that. You can't take it with you is another one of my favorites because of just all of the social commentary. I really think Capra. And I'm not saying anything that people don't already know. Capra was so good at social commentary, and these are, I think, all of them have good comments, except maybe Arsenic and Old Lace, my favorite, but it's just so silly.
You're telling me that It's a Wonderful Life isn't even on your list? Wow.
It isn't. I still like It's a Wonderful Life quite a lot, but I, as far as top five, it doesn't quite hit it.
Okay. All right, that's fair. Not everyone can love this movie as much as some of us. Which is fine, that's allowed. If everyone only loved the movie, then there wouldn't be anything to talk about, because we would all say this is just such a great movie. So
I do think that it's such a great movie, though.
I agree. I
It would
definitely
be
agree with you
very
on that.
strange if you didn't feel that way.
That's right. That is correct. And I do. I definitely do. All right, so do you want to tell people where they how they can find you?
Of course, you can find me at rockyhorrorminute.com or just look up Rocky Horror Minute any place you get your podcasts.
All right, great. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Mover a Minute. You can find me on my website, moveraminute.com. You can find me on Twitter, and you can find me on Facebook. So until tomorrow, hot dog.
Hot
I
dog.
love you truly, truly dear. Life with its sorrow. Life with its tears.